You're listening to Autumn on the Air, the weekly podcast that brings you conversations about the impact of research commercialization and the people who make it happen. Join us for interviews with patent and licensing professionals, innovators, entrepreneurs, and tech transfer leaders on the issues and trends that matter most. Keep listening for an inside track on the people, IP policies, and politics changing our world.
Women's History Month is an annual observance dedicated to honoring the contribution of women to events in history and contemporary society. It's a time to celebrate the achievements and resilience of women across various fields, including technology transfer and innovation. Throughout history, women have played pivotal roles in shaping our world through their groundbreaking inventions, pioneering research, and entrepreneurial spirit. Despite facing systemic barriers and gender biases, women have persevered and have left an indelible mark on the tech transfer landscape. Today, we're talking about the history of women inventors and their profound impact on innovation. And who better to guide us through this exploration of women inventors than our guest today, Rebecca Oates, historian at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. With her expertise and dedication to preserving historical narratives, Becky is uniquely positioned to shed light on the stories of women inventors and their lasting legacy. Welcome, Becky. I'm so excited to have you here on the air.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I'm really, really excited about today's conversation, and I think we have a lot of really great things to talk about. So let's kick things off with me asking you, can you share with our listeners why it's so important to highlight the contribution of women inventors throughout history?
Absolutely. So there's a very common saying, necessity is the mother of invention. And studying inventions throughout history really proves this to be true because it gives us a unique window into what was important for society at the time and the major questions that they were trying to solve. The vast majority of inventors throughout history did not invent merely for the sake of inventing. They were trying to solve real problems and make life better for people around them. And I think that's especially true of traditionally marginalized groups like women. So the stories themselves, we can use them to gain insight into how women were applying their unique perspectives to problems. And the stories are just inspiring. So aside from, you know, teaching us very vital lessons about the history of our country, we can also find cases of women in different industries and backgrounds who overcame challenges and made a difference. And that really matters to us today because many inventors are trying to do the same exact thing. And finally, these stories are often really relatable. I find it's much easier to connect with the past when we do through the lens of someone who looked like us or had similar experiences or faced similar problems. So by delving into not only the trends of women inventing more broadly throughout history, but their individual stories and what they faced, we can really connect with past inventors in a way that we would be missing out on if we didn't take the time to do that.
Yeah, and thank goodness we have you in your role there at the Patent Office, you know, highlighting and preserving all these for us. And, you know, I do want to ask you, when you're exploring the archives at the USPTO, what fascinating stories have you uncovered about pioneering women to start with, particularly pioneering women inventors that may have been overlooked in the mainstream historical narratives?
Yeah, so two of the things that really surprised me when I started digging into this work, because before I worked at the USPTO, I was a trained historian, but I didn't have a background in the history of innovation in particular. So like many, I think, probably listened to this podcast, when I learned about inventors, I learned about people like Thomas Edison and Alexander Graham Bell, and it didn't really go much beyond that. So if you'd asked me to name a woman scientist or a woman doctor throughout history, I could have easily done that, but a woman inventor, I would have struggled with that question, even as a historian. So some of the things that I've really been drawn to in my research is that a lot of our daily conveniences and technologies trace back to inventions patented by women. So the very fact that I'm able to talk to you through a computer screen right now, we're in two different locations and we're able to easily have this conversation is thanks to an inventor named Marion Crook. Windshield wipers, Bluetooth technology, the dishwasher. So things we use on a daily basis, they all trace back to inventions created by women to solve problems in their time periods. And then another aspect that I found really fascinating about the history of women and innovation in particular is the phenomenon of women inventing for other women. So a lot of times I think we we kind of make a little bit of the mistake of treating some industries as more important than others. And that's through kind of a societal lens. Oftentimes in the past, that was through a lens that was particularly male focused. But women throughout history have recognized that there were gaps in the market. There were gaps in what technologies were available that they would have used on a day-to-day basis. And their inventions really center around, in a lot of cases, center around those technologies. So they're offering their unique perspectives on things that other women would need and making a success story in the marketplace because they were uniquely positioned to understand a problem that many of the dominant manufacturers or business people at the time were not.
Now, Becky, I wanted to ask you, throughout history, women have faced systemic barriers to patenting and recognition for their inventions. Can you shed some light on some of the legal and societal challenges these inventors encountered and how they managed to navigate those?
Absolutely. So in the United States, we're primarily dealing with societal barriers. So the patent system in the United States was theoretically pretty democratized. Anyone who was a U.S. citizen at the beginning and then later on, basically anyone who paid the fees and followed the directions and had a novel invention could receive a patent. But there are a lot of societal barriers that make this not necessarily as easy for certain groups of people, women included, in history. So many women, as I mentioned, are inventing to solve a problem, and in a lot of cases, they're not necessarily initially seeking patent protection. They're trying to solve a problem for themselves or for their communities. But those who did faced an uphill battle getting their product to market. So even if they were able to receive a patent either on their own or find a lawyer who is willing to represent them, which itself could be a barrier. Manufacturing throughout much of U.S. history was a very male-dominated field. They're facing a lot of challenges trying to actually get their product out to the people who need it. And I'll say that the determination that women inventors showed throughout history is incredible. So many of these women have the experience of being the only woman in the room, and they overcame that. And through their success actually paved the way for other women to do the same. So if a woman was successful at a university, that university would consider admitting other women to the program. Same thing with businesses. A lot of these trailblazers kind of faced this undue pressure of having to be perfect, which I think is something a lot of women today can still relate to.
It still happens a lot today. I completely agree with you on that point.
A lot of these women are keenly aware that they have a perspective that's vital to their industry's advancing, and they use mechanisms like the press and advertising to advance that as well. So they also use the patent system as a tool. So not only was their invention protected with a patent, but the patent was proof that their invention was contributing something new and novel. So in many cases, you have some cases where women try to hide their gender, hide their identities, but in other cases, they put that front and center and say, this was invented by a woman because we have a better understanding of this industry, and the inventors really wanted to make sure that people knew that when their product was brought to market.
As a historian at the USPTO, can you share some notable cases where women inventors challenged gender norms and reshaped perceptions of what women could achieve?
Absolutely. So one case that springs to mind immediately is a woman named Margaret Knight. She was an inventor in the mid 19th century, and she was in the manufacturing industry. And Margaret Knight's really interesting because not only was she a woman inventor pretty early on in U.S. history, but she was also a working class inventor. So she started working in the textile mills in New England at the age of 13. So a time where child labor is still very, very common. And her first invention was also at the age of 13. So she didn't receive a patent for that one, but it improved safety, basically safety in the mills. And this really set out a pathway to inventing for her. And she continued as she worked in the manufacturing industry to kind of challenge pre-existing functions of machinery up until the point where she made the invention she's most well known for, which was a flat bottom paper bag machine. So basically when you go to the grocery store and you have a flat bottomed paper bag, she made those much, much easier to produce so that they could be produced on a mass scale. Her invention was actually challenged in court by a man named Charles Anand. He worked in the same manufacturing shop that she did, and he tried to steal her invention, basically. And he argued in court that Knight couldn't possibly understand the mechanical complexities of the machine.
Oh my, he had the nerve to argue. Essentially, she wasn't smart enough to come up with her invention.
Exactly. Even though they worked in the same place, they had effectively the same job. He's arguing that as the basis of his case, the only basis of his case, really. Knight produced the original blueprints and she won the case easily. So she's a really good example of someone who actually had to defend her intellectual property protection and did so with her technical knowledge and with her documentation, making sure that she had all of her ducks in a row. A little bit of a softer example, an inventor named Valerie Thomas, who went on to work at NASA as an engineer with NASA, describes in her early life checking out from the library a book called The Boy's First Book of Radio and Electronics. So that was what was available to her as a young girl interested in electronics. She was 8 years old. And to me, again, it's a little bit of a softer example, but it really gets at this idea of the perseverance and the determination that a lot of these inventors have, because a lot of people would have looked at that book and said, oh, this isn't for me, or I feel unwelcome here. And the unwelcome, that's a valid reaction to a title like that. But Valerie Thomas persisted. She decided that she was going to enter this field regardless of how people perceived her in those initial introductions, and it has gone on to be extremely successful in her field.
Wow, that's a great story. She wasn't deterred by the fact that she didn't see anyone else like her. The book was obviously geared towards boys, not girls, and she continued on because that was her dream. That's an amazing example. So I wanted to ask you, reflecting on the Industrial Revolution and subsequent technological advancements, how did women's role in invention and innovation evolve, and what impact did their contributions have on shaping our society?
Yeah, so women have always been inventors. So from the beginnings of society, women have been involved in innovation. So in their homes, in agriculture, in their respective industries, and what really happened is it became more formalized over time. So when the U.S. patent system was created in 1790, it was, I mentioned earlier, it was relatively democratized, but barriers still existed. But over time, women advocated for rights that helped them enter the patent system and the innovation ecosystem more broadly. So they advocated for access to educational institutions. So being able to move into universities, colleges, institutions of higher learning and pursue the degrees that they wanted to pursue. Financial institutions, another major funding is a major barrier for a lot of inventors. Being able to get a business loan, that's something that in certain periods of time a woman couldn't do without her husband or father's signature. That's something women advocated for. Business opportunities in general. So successful women challenged society's expectation of what is possible. And because of those trailblazers, more women were admitted to universities, granted loans, and eventually entered the workforce. So women inventors changed the world, not only for the inventions themselves changed the world, but the example that they set also changed the world for other future inventors.
So, Becky, as you know, many women inventors have had to overcome not only gender biases, but also racial or ethnic discrimination. Can you discuss the intersectionality of gender and race in the history of women inventors and how it influenced their experiences?
Absolutely. So this is an extremely important question and extremely important to understanding kind of the breadth of women's experiences, because not all women are having the same experiences. So I'll use two examples of specific inventors to highlight both the barriers that are existing for specifically women of color trying to enter the innovation ecosystem, and then also some of the particular ways that their experiences actually make innovation better. So first, there's the experience of an inventor named Mary Beatrice Kenner. She invented in the early 20th century, basically the precursor to the maxi pad. So something, again, a woman inventing for other women, something that was vitally needed by society at the time. And she actually had some initial interest from manufacturers. So people, even a male-dominated manufacturing world, was seeing the value in her invention, at least in kind of the commercial benefit to their companies. So she had some initial correspondence with manufacturers. It was all going very positively until they met in person and discovered that Mary Kenner was Black.
Oh my.
And after they met in person, the manufacturers basically disappeared. They ghosted her. So she, kind of writing about this later, could only infer, I think we all assume correctly infer, that her race is playing
absolutely
a factor here. So even in a situation where there the manufacturers were willing to overlook that the inventor was a woman, which isn't always the case, being a Black woman is a barrier to commercializing her product. So she received a patent. When we look at her patent today, we can see the direct line to the products we use today. But she wasn't able to financially benefit from her patent because of her race. So that's one example. She is not uncommon, unfortunately. That's something that we see again and again with women of color throughout U.S. history. Another example, kind of on the more positive side, where we're looking at how someone's experiences within their community and with their racial background actually benefited innovation. Patricia Bath, who was an ophthalmologist, she was one of the first Black women to be inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame a couple years ago. She was most famous for inventing the laser phaco probe, which revolutionized cataract surgery. But she also invented an entire field of medicine, community ophthalmology, which basically looks at societal factors to try to prevent occurrences of disease through a kind of constant care and doctor's visits, checkups, things that we all recognize are vitally important to protecting disease today. And the reason she invented this is because in her community in Harlem, New York, where she served her residency, she noticed that the Black community within New York City had a much higher prevalence of eye issues than her white patients. So she recognized a need that others hadn't and found a solution through this community ophthalmology so that could be improved on in the future.
Now, Becky, we often hear about famous male inventors. But at the outset of this podcast, you named several of them, actually. They're the ones that turn up in history books we learn about in school. So I'm curious, what efforts have been made to ensure that the stories of women inventors are preserved and celebrated, particularly within educational curricula and public discourse?
Fantastic question. So I think Women's History Month itself is a great example of this. Have a month kind of dedicated to highlighting stories of women throughout history in different fields. And, you know, and this has become something that a lot of people, ranging from government agencies to companies to school systems, are engaging with. And of course, women should be celebrated. The history of women should be celebrated 365 days of the year. But having a dedicated month is a step towards getting us to that point where women's history really is integrated fully into how U.S. history is taught, which we still have some work to do on that front. We've come a long way. We still have some work to do. Another trend I've just noticed in the field, when I was in grade school, a lot of times women's history or Black history or any historically marginalized group, it would be segregated in the textbook. So you'd have your main article on the Industrial Revolution, and then there's a little box right in the corner that talks about a woman who did something cool. And we're moving away from that, luckily, because it was important. At the time, it was at least an introduction. It was a highlight. But we're moving towards integrating that narrative more fully into, quote unquote, the main narrative, because it is. It's all part of the same story. Some of the things that I've seen kind of specific in the field of invention, For example, the National Inventors Hall of Fame, which is our close partner at the USPTO, they've undergone a major initiative in recent years to diversify their class of inventors being inducted, and to take a look at not only the impact that the invention has, but the impact that the inventor themselves has on society. And that's, and we've come a long way to kind of balancing the narrative in that sense. We have a lot of, you know, initiatives at the USPTO center. We have an entire women's entrepreneurship initiative at the USPTO, which is really centered on, you know, modern entrepreneurs, but bringing in the stories of historic innovators who face some of these challenges can really help, as I mentioned, inspire, but also kind of serve as a blueprint in a lot of ways about, you know, what challenges these women might face and how some people in the past have overcome them that they can kind of look to kind of as they navigate their own journey. So a lot of positive movement, still a lot of work to do. But I think that more and more people are looking for stories like this, and understanding the representation is really important, and trying to bring that representation to people when they talk about an invention more broadly.
I think, Becky, you need to write a book, actually, based on all that you've discovered there in the archives there at the USPTO. I'm sure you'd have no shortage of information. So, Becky, looking at the broader context of women's rights movements, how did the fight for gender equality intersect with the struggle for recognition and empowerment of women inventors throughout history?
That's a fantastic question. And this is something that, again, it surprised me a little bit when I first started doing research, but in retrospect, it shouldn't have surprised me at all. And that's when you look at the Venn diagram between women inventors and people who were involved in the suffrage movement in the late 19th century, early 20th century, it's basically a circle. And I don't mean that lightly, not everyone was, but there's so many women inventors who were very heavily involved in the suffrage movement. And I think that really ties into this idea of solving problems, making the world better, setting a path for those who come after, which are all trends that we see with inventors throughout U.S. history. So just to give a couple of examples, Anna Kiechlein, who was an architect from Pennsylvania, she invented what we call now the K-brick, and it was basically a more efficient kind of architectural foundational piece for specifically homes. She did a lot with homes and smaller structures. And Anna Kiechlein was involved in her local suffrage movement in Bellefonte, Pennsylvania. But she also advanced the idea that women were uniquely suited for building homes because women understood how homes functioned better than men. So she's taking kind of her experience as an architect and applying it to not only her field, the patents that she's getting, but also applying it more broadly to how women can contribute to society. There's another example, a woman named Lyda Newman. She was a Black woman living in New York City in the late 19th century and invented a hairbrush that could have basically a chamber that would catch all of the kind of soot, dust product, which were common kind of in the air in a large city at this time, and was able to be easily cleaned. And she was involved in the suffrage movement as well, which the suffrage movement, kind of leading back to intersectionality, was a lot of times segregated. So Black women were barred from some of the major kind of initiatives and major organizations within the suffrage movement, and kind of ended up creating their own spaces to advance for women's rights. And Lyda Newman was actually in charge of a branch of the suffrage movement in New York City. And one of the things she noticed was that women who were mothers were having trouble joining in on the suffrage events or organizing because they had childcare responsibilities. So she set up childcare within this within her branch of the suffrage movement, and that was actually adopted by the larger suffrage movement afterwards. So she's innovating in a very different way than her patent, but she's still innovating and making things better. The suffrage movement actually used in women's inventions as evidence of why women deserve the right to vote. So in addition to the inventors themselves being involved, the inventions are evidence. And then you lead to, you know, after women get the right to vote, there's still a lot of structural barriers preventing them from kind of reaching full potential within the workplace. And you have stories like the Frankfurt sisters, who were three sisters in living in Texas during the mid 20th century. And they realized kind of through their own experiences with pregnancy that many women were leaving the professional workforce when they were pregnant because they didn't have professional looking clothes to wear. And so this seems like something that always should have been a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But they made it a thing. They received patents. They have they had a registered trademark for their company, and they made fashionable, stylish, practical business clothing for women who were pregnant, allowing them to stay in the workforce throughout their pregnancy. And so that helped women stay in the workforce longer. So these types of stories really show that, once again, women's perspectives are not only leading to patented inventions, but they're also leading to societal change.
Now, Becky, we talked a little bit before about famous male inventors in history books, and you know, we often hear about famous male inventors during wartime as well. Could you shed some light on the role of women inventors during periods of conflict and how their inventions contributed to military or civilian efforts?
Absolutely. So I mentioned Bluetooth as one of the technologies that we can trace back to a woman's patent. So if I were to say to our listeners, Hedy Lamarr invented Bluetooth, that might come as a surprise to some. She's actually, I think, has gotten a lot more attention about her invention in recent years. But Hedy Lamarr, yes, that Hedy Lamarr, the actress, invented the technology that our modern Bluetooths rely on during World War II. And so she was brilliant. So her mind, the way her mind worked was, basically had the idea, but didn't necessarily have the technical knowledge to put it together. So she actually partnered with, I believe he was a director or producer, so someone else in the entertainment industry who had that knowledge. And together they developed, frequency stopper that, they kind of pitched to the US military for use during the war. That technology was not actually used by the military during World War II, but it is foundational for, things like Bluetooth and some of our other satellite technologies today. So she kind of wanted to contribute to the war effort and used her talents to do so. Another inventor whose product was actually used during the war, a woman named Martha Costin, she invented a signal flare that was used for naval ships that was actually used by the U.S. Army during the Civil War. So her technology, again, necessity being the mother of invention, she actually started working on her technology before the Civil War because unfortunately, her husband died and she had young children to take care of and she needed a source of financial income. So she picked up some of her husband's basically preliminary doodles about this idea for a signal flare, and she made it work and did the work, was able to adopt it to be use multiple colors, things that were very useful for a kind of a growing naval force at the time. And the U.S. Navy adopted her technology during the Civil War. So those are just two examples. A lot of women are also contributing to the workforce through their labor at this time, including inventors at the time. So, but those are just two examples of how technology created by women both was used by the military and adapted for civilian use after the conflict was over.
Now, I'm curious, Becky, in your research, have you run across any collaborative networks or communities formed by women inventors in the past? And if you have, how have these networks contributed to their success and resilience in male-dominated fields?
Absolutely. So two examples that come to mind, both in terms of networks kind of making a difference for women and specifically making a difference in male-dominated fields are Madam C.J. Walker and Harriet Strom. So Madam C.J. Walker, she was a Black woman in again, this kind of turn of the 20th century period. And she noticed that a lot of the hair care products on the market weren't really suitable for Black hair. And so she created her own products. She kind of had personally suffered from, baldness from products that were too harsh, issues with her own hair. So she created products and built basically kind of a cosmetic empire, if you will, going from door to door to eventually kind of opening a small shop, then a bigger shop. And then she took it a step further. So she, after kind of securing her own commercial success, she wanted to share what she learned with others, both in terms of hair care itself, but also entrepreneurship. So she started a school primarily for other Black women to learn from her, not only about, her hair care products, what they could provide to their own communities, but also how she went about building her business. And from that, we can kind of trace many other successful women, including a woman named Marjorie Stewart Joyner, who is now inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame, has a patented invention for a method of curling hair. So she is a great example of a woman who is advancing. She's advancing kind of the careers of other women. After she reaches her own success, she's passing that on. And even in her death, she had amassed quite a fortune throughout her lifetime. And even in her death, she willed a great deal of money to a historically Black college and university. So she's kind of advancing that further to make sure that more people have opportunities to enter the to enter kind of the field of entrepreneurship. Harriet Strong's another really good example. She, kind of similar to Martha Costin, she invented because she needed to put food on the table. Her husband died. She had four children. She had a failing ranch in a arid part of California in the late 1800s, and she needed to figure out some way to generate income. So she, through kind of a long process, invented an irrigation system that eventually, the underpinnings of that irrigation system led to the system that we have in the American West today, including the Hoover Dam. She knew in her lifetime that her technology had the power to change life in the American West for the people. And she actually advocated up to Congress for some of this irrigation technology to be adapted more broadly. And they kind of blew her off and I think this is another experience that a lot of women have, until a man came along, pitched the same kind of idea, and lo and behold, her technology was eventually adopted. But Harriet Strong also saw the potential for women to innovate in areas where traditionally women were not, permitted or encouraged to. And so she set up networks to train women in business as well. So recognizing kind of the potential of those innovations, and also making sure that other women had were able to learn from the lessons that she learned, but also able to be as successful as possible within the bounds of society at the time.
Now, Becky, you've given some examples of where some women have encountered resistance, and I'm sure you've probably run across some instances where women face backlash from their male counterparts or even established institutions. Can you share some more instances of those with us and how these women responded to those challenges?
Yeah, so one great example, an inventor named Beulah Louise Henry, and she's kind of unique in the kind of trends for women inventors at the time, because she was a inventor by occupation. So she, for example, on the 1930 census, if you look at her occupation, it says inventor. So she made a career out of invention, which isn't necessarily common for women at the time. But she faced a lot of resistance to this in her early career. So before she started being really successful, one of her first inventions and her first commercially viable invention was an umbrella that had snap-on, snap-off covers, so that you could change the color of the umbrella based on your outfit. And this invention at first, manufacturers were unwilling to bite on it because they didn't really see the value in it. And again, male manufacturers didn't necessarily understand the commercial value of the product. She worked very hard to kind of convince them of that. And then they moved on to, oh, well, I don't understand how it'll work. So she basically, out of frustration, after explaining to the umpteenth manufacturer or even patent attorney, she had trouble getting a patent attorney to believe that her invention would work. Basically describes this instance where she kind of stomped it on the stairs of a patent attorney, returned to her rented home in New Jersey at the time, and just went out in her backyard and tried and tried and tried until she made herself a prototype. So this is something that she didn't know how to do. She had to kind of learn on the fly. But with the prototype in hand, she was able to prove that her invention worked. And then she was able to get a patent model builder, an attorney, and eventually a manufacturer to accept her product. So that's one example of would her experience been different if she was male? Would that person maybe have taken it a little bit more in stride that, yes, of course, the invention would work? It's possible, probably, but she didn't stop. She didn't give up. She made it happen. And so she's one great example kind of on that that personal scale of overcoming a challenge that many other people probably would have just given up. Another example, actually, not an inventor, but someone who worked at the patent office historically, Clara Barton. So Clara Barton actually got her first job with the federal government was with the patent office as a clerk. And Clara Barton was a trailblazer for many, many ways in many different fields. But specifically at the patent office, she was the first woman to be paid an equal salary to a man. In her position. And she was very diligent about this in her educational career. She actually left jobs when she found that she was being paid less than her male colleagues. And she has a famous quote, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically it amounts to, she's willing in some cases to work for free, but if she is paid, she should be paid the same amount as anyone else with the same skills and the same position. So she's setting an example in that case. And she faced backlash for that. She faced harassment, kind of unfair practices within the patent office from her male colleagues, and she was eventually dismissed from her position for her political views, being anti-slavery Republican during the Buchanan administration right before the Civil War. So she faced a lot of backlash in her early career, and of course went on to serve as a nurse during the Civil War, found the American Red Cross, but she's taking all of that determination that she shows kind of later and trailblazing for women within the civil service. And that's kind of Clara Barton's a household name today. We see her in our history books, but that aspect of her story isn't as widely known.
Oh, no, it really isn't widely known. I didn't even know that. And yeah, we just learned about the founding of the Red Cross and her role in the Civil War. So thank you very much for sharing that. And I wanted to ask you now, Becky, with the emergence of new technologies in the late 20th and early 21st centuries, have you noticed any shifts in the type of inventions patented by women? And how have these innovations reflected changes in societal needs and aspirations?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question. And I'd say probably the most common answer you'll get to that question is that women are patenting more. And they're inventing more in the, quote, hard sciences. So like chemistry, physics, computer technology. And that's all true. But one trend that really sticks out to me is that more women are making a career out of invention. So in the past, women like I mentioned, Beulah Louise Henry, who was a career inventor, she held dozens of patents. Women like her were rare. Most women inventors that we see throughout history are inventing to solve a very specific problem or a very specific set of problems in their industry or within their scope of knowledge. It was a means to an end. So it's much more common historically to see women with one or a handful of patents. And those stories are still vitally important. But now you have women who are master inventors at multi-billion dollar companies and that have their names on hundreds of patents. And that's something that we just did not see historically. So I think that to me is the trend that sticks out the most is that women who are not, who have that talent and that drive to invent and to kind of allow their inventive mind to take them in whatever direction it does, they have more opportunity and they're making more opportunity in industries today than ever before.
Now, in your exploration of the historical records, have you observed any regional or cultural differences in the experience of women inventors, particularly as it relates to access to resources, patenting processes, or societal attitudes?
Yeah, so I'd say for the most part, it largely follows trends of society and invention as a whole. So there's always more opportunities in larger cities and more industrialized areas. But women were inventing everywhere. So, you know, we have examples like Harriet Strong, where women are inventing in rural areas. We have, you know, examples of women in different industries throughout the United States at different times. So, but intersectionality, I will say, plays a role here as well. In the kind of turn of the 20th century period, millions of Black Americans were moving from the rural South to northern cities during the Great Migration. And a Black woman at this time period in the North is much more likely to receive a patent than a Black woman in the South. So things like that absolutely are having an impact. But for the most part, it's following trends of society as a whole. I will say that class plays a role. So throughout especially the 19th century, but even going into the early 20th century, middle and upper class women were much more likely to receive patents. And that's not only due to financial means. It's, of course, easier. It's easier to pay a patent at a fee if you have money to pay it. But it also is because of support networks. So people like Beulah Louise Henry she's a great example. She couldn't have that period of struggle when she was trying to establish herself as an inventor if someone wasn't there to support her, in this case, her parents. And access to education is another major factor. So working class women were absolutely innovating, but the patent records don't always reflect that innovation because they don't necessarily have the means to receive a patent for the things that they're inventing.
Now, with the advent of internet and digital archives, how has the access to historical records transformed our understanding of contribution of women inventors? And what new insights have emerged as a result?
So the digital revolution was a game changer for historians. Just brought across the board, it made our work in some ways easier because we have access to records that we wouldn't necessarily have all had access to before. But in some ways it makes it more difficult because just the sheer volume of information. So one of the things I struggle with just kind of anecdotally when I'm doing research on a particular subject is actually stopping myself from researching.
I would imagine that's really hard. You can keep digging and digging and digging.
Yeah. So at some point I have to say, I've got enough to write this story and I need to move on. But a lot of records do remain undigitized, and especially for kind of put hidden figures or historically marginalized groups, there's still some aspect of hunting through the archives, which is great. But having easy access to things like the U.S. Census is so hugely valuable because that's time that I would have spent going to the National Archives and digging through census files. I now have that at the tips of my fingers, and I can spend that time digging into some other harder to find resources instead. Same thing with digitized historic newspapers. A lot of women inventors and kind of inventors really more broadly that aren't some of the big famous names, they're not necessarily discussed in published articles and scholarly books in the past. And so finding these primary sources where they were maybe mentioned in a newspaper in their hometown, or we can use the census records to kind of trace them through generations and find descendants. That's something that would have been so much harder without digitized records. And also makes crowdsourcing a lot easier. So information sharing is really vital to our understanding of historically marginalized groups. And so it's a lot easier for me today to make a contact with a descendant or a local historian because I can typically find an email, a phone number, some kind of indicator online, and at least broach that initial conversation. So these are things that historians in the past just didn't have access to. And they overcame that in some ways, but in some, but in others, it opens up a whole new world of research. And it really, I think, is giving us valuable stories that otherwise would have been lost to time.
Now, what patterns or trends have you observed regarding the types of inventions pioneered by women? And how do these innovations contribute to the broader tech ecosystem?
Absolutely. So for this, I'll cite, we had a recent USPTO report found that there was a 32% increase in the number of US counties where women received patents in the last 30 years. So what this means is that not only are more women receiving patents than ever before, still have a long way to go for gender parity, but we're making progress. But more women in more places are receiving patents than ever before. So field of electricity is one really good example. In 1990, only 46 women inventors were listed on patents for electricity. So that's a very small number. In 2019, that number ballooned to nearly 3,300. So massive increase in just 30 years. Yeah. And that trend mirrors that women are now more likely to pursue a college education. And we can see that counties with a higher percentage of women with college degrees had a higher percentage of patent holders. So there's a correlation there. But it also shows that all of those trailblazers, those 46 trailblazers that came before, that came earlier, they are having an impact and, you know, setting an example for women who are entering the fields like this today. And I will say with that, a lot of times we focus on tech fields because that's, you know, an emerging field. It's a massive number of patents are being filed in tech fields, but women are still inventing for women. Even today, we can see examples of women who are identifying needs for products that, you know, a male inventor or male manufacturer might not see.
Oh yeah, femtech.
So the breadth of women's invention is still, you know, historically that's a trend that holds true. We're seeing more and more women entering kind of traditionally male-dominated fields, but I would urge us not to lose sight of the importance of women inventing for women as well, because we're half the population. We're a pretty big consumer block, so it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Becky, I wanted to ask you, what role does intellectual property play in empowering women inventors to protect and commercialize their innovations, and how do you think tech transfer professionals can help better support them in this regard?
Absolutely. And so a lot of my colleagues at the USPTO could probably answer the importance of, you know, a patent today very, very well. And I encourage everyone to check out our resources for women entrepreneurs. We have an initiative page on our website with a bunch of different options and resources for folks to check out. But in a nutshell, intellectual property protection is a vital tool in an inventor's toolbox. So it's security, but it's also an advantage in the marketplace. Historically, a manufacturer or an investor was much more likely to contribute to an inventor's invention if they knew that it was secure, and that still holds true today. So I'd say professionals who are already successful in the field, a few key things that they could do to support women innovators is first, encourage inventors to apply for a patent protection as early as possible. So with the first inventor to file standard, a provisional patent can be a game changer for an inventor. Next, I would say provide mentorship and help with networking whenever possible. We've got a great mentorship toolkit on our website, and mentorship can look like different things. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a years-long relationship. It can be an introduction. It can be some well-placed advice. And then kind of along the lines with that, even if you're not necessarily the right person to help a particular inventor, try to think of someone who might be able to, and try to give them an introduction or give some advice for their next step. 5 minutes of your time could truly set up someone up on a trajectory that changes their lives. So for those who've already been successful in the field, kind of follow those examples set up by Madam C.J. Walker or Harriet Strong, try to kind of pass that on to the next generation of inventors.
So, Becky, as the podcast comes to a close, I wanted to ask you, as you look forward towards the future, what steps can historians, educators, and society as a whole take to ensure that the legacies of women inventors are preserved and celebrated for generations to come?
Absolutely. So representation is important. When we're choosing someone to highlight, and storytelling is, in my opinion, a vital part of communication. It's a vital part of how we understand the world. So when we're choosing the stories to highlight, think carefully about who you're choosing and why. And if you notice that the same people are being highlighted in a particular instance over and over and over again, it takes nothing away from those folks to consider digging a little deeper. So highlighting more inventors doesn't take anything away from highlighting the inventors that we're all familiar with. There's space. There's no scarcity of space for storytelling. So consider digging a little deeper, and I promise you won't have to look too hard because there are so many rich stories of women who made a difference in their time and in ours. So this information is out there. There's a lot of historians and a lot of women's advocacy groups, industries who are doing the work to bring these stories to the forefront. And so anything that we can do to advance and tell those stories does make an impact. Women's History Month is a great opportunity to raise up these stories, but they, as I mentioned earlier, they are stories we should be telling 365 days of the year. So don't feel like this is the only opportunity within the month of March to tell these stories. Think of other opportunities to tell them as well. And finally, let yourself be inspired. So a lot of times I think we fall into the category of looking at the first, the biggest, or the most important. And I would challenge us to really seek out opportunities to, instead of thinking in superlatives, to think in understanding. Understanding the motivations behind why an inventor did what they did. Delving into their story and learning how some of their emotions, some of the things they went through, really can mirror what inventors are going through today. Because not everyone's going to invent the first, the biggest, or the most important. But everyone who invents has the experience of overcoming a challenge. They have the experience of having a drive or a motivation to invent. And those are stories that are reflected in, you know, countless anecdotes and experiences of women throughout history. So as kind of a final note, I would just allow yourself to experience the story, to be inspired by that, by these really trailblazing and remarkable women, and to let those stories guide us into thinking about the past, but also our present day challenges in a new way.
Well, Becky, this has been absolutely phenomenal. Your work is just incredible. Thank you for all that you do and for taking all this time today and sharing all this information with us. This has been really great. So thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Lisa. This is my pleasure. So it was fantastic to speak with you today.
That brings us to the end of this episode. I'd like to thank our guest, Becky, historian at the USPTO, for joining us and sharing her insights. From groundbreaking inventions to pioneering research and entrepreneurial spirit, women have played pivotal roles in shaping our world. Despite facing systemic barriers and gender biases, their resilience has persevered, leaving a lasting impact on the tech transfer landscape. As we honor the achievements of women inventors, it's crucial to recognize the significance of preserving their legacies for future generations. By shining a light on their contributions, we not only inspire others, but also lay the groundwork for advancing gender equality and inclusivity in the realms of innovation and technology transfer. For more information about Women's History Month, women inventors, and resources available, check out the Women's History Month Resource Hub at autumn.net.
Thanks for listening to Autumn on the Air with Lisa Mueller. Get social with us and share your thoughts. You can tweet us at AUTM or visit us online at AUTM.net. We'll be back next week on the air. Be sure to join us.